supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Every month, about 1,800 people are released from Pennsylvania state prisons. And within 3 years, more than half of them will be arrested again or back behind bars. To better understand the complicated mix of factors behind that statistic, WHYY spent the last year following one woman, Radina Rodriguez, after she was released from state prison. We're devoting this entire special episode of NewsWorks Tonight to Radina's story. We'll listen as she searches for a job and a place to live and tries to regain custody of her teenage daughter, all while recovering from addiction and trying to beat the odds faced by people with criminal records. WHYY's Katie Culinary takes it from here.
It's late December, and Radina Rodriguez is sitting in a classroom in Philadelphia. She's here because a month ago, she was released from state prison, and she says she wants to change.
I'm Radina. I'm leaving behind drinking, DUIs, prostitution, jail, drugs, resentment, using people, codependency, selling drugs, impulsive thinking, the streets, negative behaviors, rebellion, stealing, manipulating, and lying.
Radina's 48 years old and has a contagious, raspy laugh, green eyes, and a mane of curly hair dyed a dark shade of red. She's part of a 10-week program called Women Working for a Change, run by the Philadelphia anti-violence group Mothers in Charge. Now it's week 5, the halfway point. Outside during a smoke break, Radina tells me she's been in prison for 11 of the last 17 years. Her first crime was 25 years ago.
Back in 1992, I got a forgery.
Radina was 24, and she got hooked on crack cocaine.
I wasn't one of those typical, you know, I was smoking weed and drinking when I was a young kid or anything like that. I had, a difficult childhood. And instead of turning to drugs, I turned to relationships. And I turned to the first drug that the guy I was in a relationship had. And it stuck.
Radina and a friend were arrested for forging about $450 worth of checks and cashing them at grocery stores in central Pennsylvania, where she grew up. She eventually pleaded guilty to 3 felony charges and was sentenced to 23 months probation. That touched off a vicious cycle of addiction and probation violations that went on for several years. Then in 1999, Radina was arrested in a notorious crack house in Harrisburg. Reading the court transcripts, the judge really threw the book at her. He told her she thought she could just do whatever she wanted and get off easy by giving him a sob story about her children. Guess what, the judge said. The string has run out. He resentenced her to 3 to 21 years in Pennsylvania State Prison. Since then, Radina's been in and out of prison 6 times. The last time was for a DUI, her first new charge in more than 2 decades.
I always thought, like, oh, I've been screwed by the justice system because I got 3 to 21 years. I'm doing time that murderers get, you know, for being an addict. And it's still, at the end of the day, what I'm learning is it's a choice. You can use or not use.
Now, Radina and the dozen other women in the Mothers in Charge program are getting paid $200 a week to work, though not in the traditional sense. Aside from writing resumes and getting job leads, the women are working on how to deal with some pretty complex emotions and coming to terms with the trauma they've faced. There's also a huge emphasis on spirituality, leaning on a higher power, and on accepting their checkered and painful past while learning to let them go. It can be really intense. Take this moment with one of the facilitators, Sharon Thomas, who herself is a recovering addict.
Because it's the ones that love you the most that hold you more accountable for the stuff you've done. Because we hurt our families. We forgot that. Sometimes it takes 15 years, and they still want to hold that over your head. But that's up to you how you receive that. I don't receive it. I don't.
They all suffer from abandonment, you know, every one of them. And I know that I play a part in that.
For Radina, her kids are a major part of coming to terms with her past. She has five of them, all adults now, except for her youngest, 13-year-old Jordan. They were all raised by myriad relatives and foster parents, and for much of their childhoods, Radina wasn't there. She says the gnawing guilt used to drive her back to using drugs and alcohol. But Mothers in Charge is helping her to accept that so she can move on. She recently reunited with the youngest after not seeing Jordan since she was 6 years old.
I was on my way there. I told her I missed the bus and I wouldn't be there till 9 o'clock at night. And she was really upset, but truth is I got there on time. And I walked up to the door with a caseworker and she almost knocked the caseworker over coming out the door to get to me. And when she hugged me and just started sobbing in my arms, like it's like everything in the world was okay. Because she loved me. Because she forgave me. And at that moment, I knew that I was going to do anything to do right by her, too.
Across the United States, there are eight times as many women in prison today as there were in 1980. In Pennsylvania, there are 10 times as many. And as with men, the odds are stacked high against them when they get out. Christy Vischer has been studying prisoners' reentry to society for more than 15 years.
I'm a director for the Center for Drug and Health Studies at the University of Delaware, and I'm also a professor in the Department of Sociology and Criminal Justice.
Vischer says men and women have a much higher risk of dying within the first 6 months of being released, from an overdose, health problems, or from going home to violent communities.
So this 6 months is really critical. And unfortunately, reentry specialists haven't really understood the importance of this particular period.
And if they do survive, most people released from prison, more than two-thirds of them, get arrested again or go back to prison within 3 years.
And this has not changed for 20 or 30 years. We're seeing the same recidivism rates. Even though we've had all this focus on reentry since early 2000.
And for women in the system, the road can be even more difficult. They're far more likely than men to have serious mental health problems and to struggle with addiction. In Pennsylvania last year, almost 60% of female inmates in state prisons required intense substance abuse treatment, compared to about 40% of male inmates. After so many years of cycling in and out of prison, what's different for Radina this time? She says the switch flipped in 2014, the last time she was arrested.
It used to make me mad, like, when I got caught, because I wanted to keep going. I wanted to keep running. But this time, I can remember when I got arrested for my DUI, I was a feeling of relief washed over me. I can remember praying and telling God that I'm tired. Tired of living like this. This isn't me. And I didn't really believe in myself at that point, like that I could stop or that I could change. I just knew that I had the willingness.
But she's also getting some help that wasn't there the last time she got out. 1 month before she was released, Radina opted into a state program giving returning inmates a medication called Vivitrol. The monthly injection blocks the opiate receptors on your brain. So if you were to drink a lot of alcohol, for example, you still wouldn't feel drunk.
I consider it to be like a miracle drug because by now I would have had a craving to use.
But Radina says so far she hasn't. The Pennsylvania Department of Corrections gave her the first shot before she was released and is helping her get 11 more. Another big change, Radina's from Harrisburg, but this time she didn't go back there. Instead, she was released to a halfway house in Philadelphia, and her counselor there got her an interview with the Mothers in Charge program. Radina has big goals now. She wants to get back custody of her daughter, Jordan. To do that, she needs to find a stable job and a place to live. But as it gets closer to the big Mothers in Charge graduation ceremony in February, Radina's getting a little nervous. The night before the ceremony, Radina calls with some bad news.
Yes.
Can you kind of start from the beginning?
Okay, yeah.
She'd submitted a request to state parole to leave the halfway house and move into a friend's apartment back in Harrisburg.
They denied it.
Radina says her friend had spoken to the landlord who'd said no problem.
And then the head lady called back and said, well, I don't know who you talked to, but they shouldn't have told you that. She said, because we do not allow people with felonies in our complex.
And unlike some of her fellow graduates, Radina doesn't have a job or another program lined up yet.
Every day I was making marks and I was bettering myself there. And it's hard when you go from 4 days a week, 8 hours a day, you know, putting so much of yourself into a program, and then boom, you're done. You're like, now what? Now what am I going to do?
Zip up your gowns.
Wearing shiny blue caps and gowns, Radina and her classmates are lining up in the hallway, getting ready for their entrance. As they walk slowly up to the front of the room, they pass tables of past graduates, their friends, family members, and some of their children. No one's here for Radina. Like most graduations, there's inspirational music and speeches, and of course, special pieces of paper.
So you got the certificate now. It's official.
It's official. It is official. Now I just need a job. I need a job. I need a job, anybody.
Radina's story continues in a moment here on a special Newsworks Tonight. Welcome back to a special Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. When we left off, Radina had just graduated from the Mothers in Charge program and was working towards getting back custody of her 13-year-old daughter. WHYY's Katie Culinary picks up the story.
Hey, it's been a while. How's it going?
The next time I see Radina, she's dressed to the nines.
I love it.
Tell me what you're wearing.
I'm wearing a pantsuit with a white tank top and these beautiful shoes that I picked out that match perfectly.
They really do.
They really do.
It's a rainy afternoon in April, and Radina's modeling for me outside the dressing room of a Philadelphia nonprofit that helps women struggling to find work get the right look for job interviews. It's been 2 months since I last saw her at her graduation.
I was discouraged for a little while because I was applying every day for jobs and it just didn't seem like anything was happening. And then all of a sudden, all these interviews kept popping up every day. So I went to a couple. The zoo interview was my favorite, like the one...
At the Philly Zoo?
Yeah.
What was the job?
Taking care of horses and ponies and giving out rides to kids and stuff. But it only paid $7.50 an hour, so unfortunately I can't raise my daughter on that.
Radina's also trying to figure out where to live. On one hand, she really wants to go back to Harrisburg. It's more affordable, and she knows how to get around without a car. Plus, she has a lead on a recovery house out there. And she was offered a job at a nearby warehouse making $12.75 an hour. But Harrisburg is where the darker parts of Radina's past, the people, places, and things associated with her addiction, could come back to haunt her. And now she has a second interview in Philadelphia at an insurance company, and she wants to give it a shot. All Radina knows right now is that she wants to leave the halfway house where she's been living for 5 months. Whenever Radina and the other residents want to go out, they need to get passes signed by both their parole officers and the staff in advance. Residents also have to go through metal detectors and get patted down by security guards whenever they enter the building.
You know, they're going up between your legs and they're going across your bra and down the middle, and it's ridiculous and it's violating and it's demeaning. This is supposed to be a step toward society.
Radina admits that in many ways, the limits have been good for her. But the longer she's there, the more she longs for her own place, where her youngest daughter, Jordan, can live with her. Every other weekend, Radina takes a nearly six-hour bus ride from Philadelphia to spend time with Jordan at a hotel in Williamsport, up in northeast Pennsylvania. The hotel is paid for by the local county Children and Youth Services Agency, so Radina and Jordan can work on rebuilding their relationship.
I need a pencil.
Jordan's been living in Williamsport with her adult half-sister, but was raised by her grandparents in New Jersey.
So what do you have so far?
On this Sunday morning, Jordan's working on her application letter to Milton Hershey, a private boarding school for disadvantaged kids.
You need to come up with something unique, though.
Okay, but I'm going to put the reasoning behind my career.
like, you're going to put the reasoning behind your career move as far as wanting to be a correction officer?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good idea.
That's right. Jordan wants to be a correctional officer when she grows up. Back in New Jersey, she worked at her uncle's karate school, coaching younger kids. But she wasn't just showing them how to kick or punch. Jordan says they were also working on conflict avoidance.
I like to, like, instruct a better mentality into them. So I, like, ended up tying that into correctional officer. Like, if I could help inmates go into, like, a better path, like my mom's, like, going to a better path after she got out, I feel like I could be, like, a really good source for them, because not a lot of inmates have, like, visitors, family, or people that are there for them. They're all on their own.
Redina and Jordan haven't spent this much time together since Jordan was two. I can see their resemblance, especially in their long, dark curls and their silly sense of humor.
I shall not let go. Never.
At one point during my visit, they start play wrestling, rolling around on one of the beds.
And this is called the scissor.
Before they check out of the hotel, I ask Jordan if she worries things will go back to the way they used to be.
I mean, like, there's always a thought, like, hey, like, something, like, an addict, like, might relapse, but I have faith in her.
How come?
Because I can't really doubt her. I have to have faith in her, or else, like, this won't work.
Jordan isn't the only one feeling optimistic about her mom's progress.
It's like night and day. She's come so far, and she's what you hope for in the system, that change can happen.
That's Jordan's caseworker, Crystal Minier. She's been with Lycoming County Children and Youth Services for 30 years. Many of the kids she worked with at the start of her career are parents themselves, parents with kids Crystal is now responsible for. She says a lot of those parents would be back behind bars or would have relapsed by now. But so far, Redina is staying on track.
The fact that she's doing well in her recovery, and that allows her to be able to focus on her daughter as well. If her recovery was in jeopardy, we wouldn't see this.
Crystal says if things keep going this well, Redina could get custody of Jordan within a year. About a week after I spent the day with Redina and Jordan, I got a text from her saying she had moved to that recovery house near Harrisburg. A month later, on Memorial Day, I go out to visit her. The house is in Lemoyne, a small suburban town just across the Susquehanna River from the state capital. She shows me around the living room and the kitchen, and then takes me upstairs to her bedroom. It's decorated with hot pink leopard print curtains with a matching bedspread. There's a fish swimming in a bowl in the corner. Redina seems really happy here, but exhausted. She's been working the late shift at a fulfillment center for an online pet supply company, driving around a cart and lifting heavy bags of dog food. And she's going to at least 4 Narcotics Anonymous meetings a week. Redina says being back in her old haunts has been easier than she thought.
Because I'm somewhere centered. I'm very centered in my thinking, and I guess I just don't want a bad ending in my story. That, and I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back.
That last thing Redina said about not wanting a bad ending to her story would haunt me for the rest of the summer. I would often lie awake at night wondering why she'd said that. Did she have a reason to think her story wouldn't end well? About a month later, she stopped picking up my calls.
Please leave your message for
Regina Rodriguez.
We'll have the conclusion of Redina's story in a moment. Welcome back to a special Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. We've been following the story of Redina Rodriguez, a recovering drug addict on parole, who was on her way to getting her life back on track when she suddenly stopped answering calls. Again, we turn to WHYY's Katie Culinary.
From the end of June until September, I can't reach Redina. Before that, it wasn't unusual for her to go even a few weeks without texting or calling me back, but this was different.
Okay, Crystal, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
In early August, I finally reach Crystal, Radina's daughter's caseworker.
So what happened?
She was here for a visit. It was a regular visit.
It was the first Friday in July. Radina had traveled up to Williamsport for one of her weekend visits with Jordan. Crystal dropped them off at the hotel. Then the two of them met up with one of Radina's friends for pizza. Afterwards, Radina told Jordan she was going to take her friend home. And Jordan went back to the hotel room alone.
Next morning, I get this frantic call from her daughter saying, she left me at the hotel 2 hours after you dropped us off and never came home, and I called all night.
I woke up to the hotel phone ringing, and they told me that an Uber was downstairs to get me.
Jordan says she got in the Uber, which took her to Radina's friend's house.
A half hour later, she ended up turning up there, and she was, like, crying, and, like, she tried to hug me, and she was like, I missed you, and I was like, please don't touch me. Like, why are you lying to me?
Radina told Jordan she had left her phone at her friend's house and gone back to get it. Then she went to buy them some food. And then her phone died.
And then she made up another story.
Eventually, Radina admitted what really happened.
She was like, well, I ran into your dad. I was like, you don't just run into him. I don't even just run into him, especially at, like, midnight or something. She's like, I ran into your dad, and he offered me some drugs. I was like, you should have said no and turned away. She ended up doing drugs with him. And then she was walking down and a man picked her up. He so happened to have drugs too.
About 6 weeks before that night at the hotel, Radina had stopped taking Vivitrol. Remember, that's the monthly injections she was getting to help treat her addictions. When she moved back to central Pennsylvania in April, she needed to change her health insurance. But her new plan wouldn't kick in until July. Radina was referred to a mobile clinic, but the nurse there didn't know Radina is part of a state program giving Vivitrol to former inmates. That means if her insurance wouldn't cover it, the state would have paid for the shots. Not knowing, the nurse instead prescribed Radina the same medication in a daily pill form. At some point, Radina stopped taking the pills. And 3 days before her new insurance was supposed to kick in, she relapsed.
I can't tell you how many times those kind of things happen. They're glitches that are ridiculous. You know, if my insurance lapsed for some reason and I can't get my thyroid pill, I'm not going to risk death. That's a little different than someone like Radina that absolutely needs to have it. You found something that works. She can't be without it.
In September, Radina and Jordan had their next hearing in family court. The court hearing officer ruled it would not be in Jordan's best interest to continue her visits with her mom. And the court has not terminated Radina's parental rights, but for now, she's no longer allowed to contact Jordan. Not long after that, Radina relapsed again.
I'm not really, like, sad. I'm more, like, angry for her.
Jordan turned 14 in August. She thinks she might try to reconnect with her mom when she gets older, but for now, Jordan says things have gotten better since she cut off contact. Her grades are up, and she has more time for her friends.
I didn't want to end up in the same place my sisters did. They were worried about her throughout their whole life. Like, is she going to relapse? Is she okay? Are we going to have a relationship now? I didn't want it to be like that. I didn't want my life to revolve around what she did and how it affected me. I guess I wanted to, like, move on a bit.
On a Friday morning at the end of September, I finally reach Radina. I'm not recording because I don't expect her to pick up, but she does. Her voice is hoarse. She sounds so tired. She tells me she's checking into rehab as we speak. On Halloween, I drive to Shippensburg to pick her up for our last interview.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm glad you brought lots of help.
It's been a while. How are you? I'm good.
A nurse helps load Radina's backpack, suitcase, and two paper bags full of medications into the trunk of my car and says goodbye to her in this way that's so cautiously encouraging. I wonder if she really believes what she's saying.
All right, Dina, good luck.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much.
I'm very glad. You look 100% better.
Thank you.
Hang in there, okay?
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
You're going to be great.
As for Radina, she's ready to take on the world again, with a vengeance.
Oh, we have so much to talk about. I do want to give you Betty's information.
It's been 5 months since I've talked to Radina in person. And as I drive her back to the recovery house in Harrisburg, I realize I've never seen Radina this angry or resentful before. A longtime friend who'd been supporting her financially, paying her rent and her phone bill, is cutting her off. And then there's Jordan, who's joined two of Radina's other children in not speaking to her.
Do you think that's the right thing for them to do?
The right thing? I don't know. I know that, like...
Radina feels deeply ambivalent. On one level, she recognizes her kids should not enable her addiction by making excuses for her. But she also yearns for their love. And I think most of all, for them to want her in their lives.
So, do I think it's the right thing? No, I would prefer that they, even though this is not the first time I relapsed, I would like to think that they could try to support me because their support for me would, oh my God, it would shoot so much motivation into me if I have them. I don't know, maybe this is such a hard topic for me because the part of me that desperately wants them in my life says, you know, you need to support me, you need to be there, you need to forgive me. But then the part of me being a mother who does love them and does want to protect them also know that they need protection from me and my addiction.
In the year I've spent with Radina, this is the thing that surprised me the most. It's no secret that people coming home from prison face a lot of challenges, like struggling to stay sober, finding someone willing to hire them or give them a decent place to live, despite their criminal records. That's why the recidivism rate is still so stubbornly high. But unlike many people, some of those things came easier for Radina than I'd expected. Zooming in the camera lens on her life, I saw something else. I saw how vulnerable the years of addiction and incarceration have left her and her family. Something that doesn't just change after a 10-week program or 60 days in rehab. I also saw the internal war people like her are fighting every day. It's a daily struggle between accepting the things they've done and moving on, and the ever-present reminders that they're the parents who left, who committed crimes. It's a lot to bear. Not just for Radina, but also for her kids, who are fighting a similar war, grappling with the spider web of consequences.
I hope one day that they will see and say, okay, my mom was 48 years old and she got clean and she stayed clean. She's such an inspiration to me. That's my biggest goal in the world, is to have my children see me as an inspiration for getting clean and not a failure.
November 14th marked 1 year since Radina was released from prison. And in some ways, she's even farther away from achieving her goals now than she was then. She's only been off drugs and alcohol for a few months. And for now, the chance to be a mother and raise her youngest daughter is off the table. She's still living at the recovery house in Harrisburg and working for an auto mechanic. Although she's relapsed twice this year, she hasn't been arrested. And she's back on Vivitrol. She'll be on parole until 2027, when she's 59.
WHYY Assistant News Director Katie Culinary reporting. This special broadcast of Newsworks Tonight was engineered and mixed by Charlie Kyer and produced as part of the Reentry Project. You can find more stories and information about the project at whyy.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, Newsworks Tonight.